Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Well, let me tell you what's going on in the Savage Nation today. At about 30 after the hour, we're going to have a former DEA undercover agent, the bravest, toughest man I ever met, on the show to talk about the drug war and if it's still actually going on. And a little bit about the Sean Penn case. That's Mike Levine. And right now, I got to tell you what happened 10 minutes ago, because it's a big story. I learned 10 minutes ago that I won in the U.S. Supreme Court. You see, a former radio individual who had been vying against me for years, tying me up with all sorts of legal tricks, lost at every level and took it to the Supreme Court. And, of course, the Supreme Court refused to hear it. Well, I don't know that this is related in any way. I doubt that it is. But he lost in the Supreme Court against yours truly yesterday. Of course, still hasn't paid me one nickel of the money that was assigned to me after 5 years of a legal battle and $1 million in fees. I haven't collected one nickel. And then someone sent me this story. Grants Pass man jailed for allegedly assaulting his wife in front of their two children. KAJL Radio, Sam Marsh, a Grants Pass man was arrested for domestic assault. I should say allegedly assaulting his wife, because at this point it's only allegedly. A Grants Pass man was arrested for allegedly assault his wife. And following a report, according to the Oregon State Police, troopers responded to a silent alarm and a 9/11 hangup from a residence at the 700 block, blah, blah, blah. Troopers said they immediately determined there had been a domestic disturbance, and they placed 51-year-old Mark Masters into custody for assaulting his wife in front of their two children. Masters was charged with felony domestic assault, menacing, and harassment. Mark Masters was lodged in the Josephine County Jail. Now, of course, he has not been found guilty in a court of law. As you know, we live in a very fair nation. And as you well know, lawyers are the most honorable amongst us, and they always do the right thing. And as you well know, justice is very inexpensive in America. After all, take my case. Tied up for over 5 years, haven't collected a nickel, cost me $1 million, but hey, at the end, justice prevailed. You know, it leads me to ask what would happen with an individual listening to this show who has gone to court or avoided court for fear of the costs because he's been intimidated by a bully in his life. That's the real question today. I want you to call with lawyer or court horror stories, because I doubt there's a single individual in this audience, poor or rich alike, who does not have such a story to tell. Have you ever lost a court case, even though you were, let us say, right? I'm sure you have. Have you ever been bullied into not even fighting a court case because the individual who dragged you into court had more money than you? I'm sure that you have. And that's what I mean. You see, there is justice in America, but it's very, very expensive. Now, along the line of my case, and I've got to go into it, you can call me on your court or lawyer horror stories at 855-407-282 if it's about you. And then I want to talk about me for a moment. I want to show you what's involved. And I've got to be very, very cautious in what I tell you. You see, many years ago, I was with a radio syndicator, and I had an offer from another company, a legitimate offer from another company. And this radio syndicator didn't want me to leave because I was, frankly, the only star he had. And he did everything he could to hold on to me. And the fact was, I went into arbitration with him because it was in my contract. And after years, and I think $800,000 at the time, three arbitrators found in my favor. And then I left that syndicator, and the rest is history. But that's not where the legal story ends. That's just where the legal story continues. The syndicator then took the case, even though he lost in arbitration, with three arbitrators after 2 years. He took it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I'm sorry, to the U.S. District Judge. The U.S. District Court had a judge who was appointed by Barack Obama, nonetheless. And he figured, well, hey, what the heck? It's a liberal court. Savage is going to get smashed. What he didn't know is that although the woman, the judge in the district court, had been appointed by Barack Obama, and although she was an Hispanic, she basically threw them out of the courtroom because they tried to smear me in ways you could never imagine. She was appalled by it. And so they lost at the district court level. So they took it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most liberal court in America, again trying to overturn the ruling of the arbitrators. That cost me another $100,000. The liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals again ruled in my favor. You'd say, well, at least it's over now. No, it's not over. I want to show you what people do in this country. He then took it to the U.S. Supreme Court. Maybe he knew that they'd never hear it, because they rarely hear cases that are of this small magnitude, to be very honest with you. But, you know, it's a big deal to me because it's 5 years of my life. And I don't want to talk about the sleepless nights. I don't want to talk about them. I want to talk about justice and injustice in America. And I want you to look at the ruling, Supreme Court of the United States, titled The Original Talk Radio Network, Inc., Petitioner, versus Michael Savage, October 19th, 2015, United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, July 17th, 2015, was the decision date. So on October 15th, there's a petition to the Supreme Court. On December 2nd, 2015, it is distributed for conference to the 9 Supreme Court justices. They hear it. The 9 justices read it, and yesterday, January 11th, 2016, the petition was denied, meaning my victory was upheld. Now, I'm not saying that this is tied into the news article of the very same night, Grant's past man jailed for allegedly assaulting his wife in front of their 2 children, but it's quite interesting to me that both of these events occurred on the very same day. But I don't want to keep it to a story about me. I want to show you something about life in America. When I was very young, I avoided lawyers. I avoided courts. I paid every traffic ticket to avoid anything to do with the law because I knew that it was a mess. If you got involved with the courts, remember, I came from I wouldn't say we weren't poor, like in the sense of living in poverty. We were lower middle class at the time, okay? 2-year-old car, no vacations, 1 car in the family, that kind of thing. And the thing is, we didn't have lawyers. We didn't go to lawyers. We didn't go to court. We avoided court. We were those kind of people because it was for rich people to fight in court. Well, as I got older and I became a writer, I found out that I needed lawyers. Book ideas were stolen. Publishers did things that were astonishing and appalling. And I found out that you needed lawyers in America to survive at any level above the most menial level. But even at the most menial level, people need lawyers today because the society is so crippled by the law. The fact of the matter is we have a lawyer for president who has crippled America by getting around the law. I don't want to go into that right now because that's an obvious fact. I've written books about getting around the law when you're a lawless president. But I want to ask you to call the Savage Nation. I've been giving you a little thumbnail sketch of what's happening in the old savage world today. And you can call me with your court horror stories today at 855-407-282. And again, at the half-hour point in this hour, we will have former DEA undercover agent extraordinaire Mike Levine, who's written some amazing books over his career. In fact, many of you may remember Mike Levine from the 90s when I was a wee lad as a talk show host here on KSFO, a local show. I put on the Compassionate Conservative events, the progenitor to the Tea Party. Those events were phenomenal. And I used to invite other speakers as warm-up acts, so to speak, which is not diminishing them in any way whatsoever. They were great people, every last one of them. Some of them have gone on to Congress, etc. So Mike Levine was my hero at the time. I've lost touch with him, and he was on stage, and I met him. We had dinners down in Sausalito at then my favorite restaurant, and we got to know each other. We'd hang out. We'd go on stage. And Mike was a certifiable, amazing human being. Here was a guy, well, I'll tell you more about it at 12:30 because I don't want to give you a build-up and then he's not on until 30 minutes after the hour. Right now, I just want to focus on court horror stories. And before I take my first break, let's begin with the first caller up there. I don't know what it's about, but it's it's Scott on KLIF in Dallas. Go ahead, please. Scott, what's on your mind? What's your court horror story?
Michael, my court horror story was I was sued by a very large multi-level marketing company, and the only thing I was guilty of was after I found out that I was being ripped off, I was trying to educate the people that were still being ripped off and this company sued me.
Oh, wait, so you were one of the people caught up in the Ponzi scheme, and you tried to blow the whistle on them, and what, they shut you up with a lawsuit?
Well, they tried to shut me up with a lawsuit. I had a very good attorney, and I ended up settling out of court because after about a year and a half of the lawsuit being open, it was very apparent that this company, even though they sued me, had no intent to go into an actual trial. They just wanted to drain me financially.
Of course, that's a tactic of a large company versus a small individual. However, when it's a small individual who knows he's right and he's got any capacity to fight, I recommend that he fight. Because most of these companies that are doing this are bullies. They're just using the threat of a lawsuit to intimidate you. So how did you settle? Did you win or lose?
I won the settlement, Michael. In fact, I've got the settlement on my website. If you'd like to have the address, the listeners can actually go and read the settlement.
Why not? Go ahead. Go in and give it out. I don't know, nothing to gain or lose by it. Go ahead.
Okay, the website is called, and this is all one word.
I don't want to get involved in your lawsuit. I thank you very much. I'd rather avoid company names for obvious reasons, okay? I don't need more trouble than I already have. I want to hear your court horror story, folks, but I don't want to become part of your court horror story, folks. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COI. Hear ye, all rise. You have now entered the Supreme Court of the Savage States of America. We are talking about your legal or court horror story. I don't think there's a listener alive who is listening to this show over the age of 15 who doesn't have a court horror story. I don't think there's a person in America not tainted by the legal system. And we're talking about it for obvious reasons. It touched me today because after a 5-year legal battle, I finally won in the U.S. Supreme Court. I didn't take it there. I was very happy to leave it at the arbitration level where I had spent $800,000 and was awarded nearly $1 million by them for withheld monies, by the way. Want me to get into that? You can look it up anyway. Not one penny of that money has ever arrived in my pocket. Where is it? Well, I'll let you try to find it. That's the legal system that we have. If you have the money, you can get away with murder in this country. Ask any drug dealer. But I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about you. I'd like to hear your cases, frankly. And I even want to hear from drug dealers on the Savage Nation. You're welcome to call. You're a free person. And we want to hear your courtroom horror stories. I think this is amazing. I love to hear this kind of stuff. So let's go to New York City, the land of the New York lawyer. Susan on WABC, what's your lawyer horror story?
Well, I'm the plaintiff in a harassment and discrimination suit for $100 million. And this case...
Wait, hold on. You're suing someone for $100 million?
My lawyer and I am.
Okay, you want to tell us what the case is about without naming the individual?
Yes, it's a harassment and a discrimination suit. And this case received an enormous amount of publicity. It had headlines in the Post. It had enormous coverage. And this was 9 years ago.
What was the case? What were you so harassed that it's worth $100 million?
Well, I was violated at my job. I was discriminated for work.
How were you violated?
I was spit at, kicked at, punched, and work was taken away from me by...
Why was that done to you? Was it done based on your gender or your race?
It was done to me because I was an American citizen and I was legal and I had a license and I was competing against people who were not only illegally in the country, they didn't have licenses and they were making tons of money because they were involved in illegal... and unethical practices, whereas I was not.
So you were attacked by the employees who were vying for the same position you were applying for, is that it?
That's correct.
Okay, so who are you suing? The company that permitted this to happen?
Yes, I am.
Well, here's what I want to know. Let's say you were assaulted. Let's say you were violated, which is horrible. I still don't understand why it's the responsibility of the company. Did they say to the people, go ahead and spit on Susan?
No, I went to them, and they did nothing about it, and then I went to the police. And the police, and I have filed a complaint with the police. My employers were also foreign, and they are of the opinion they hire their own people. And
all right, so I don't know, without going into the case, it says you sued your own lawyer. I thought your lawyer and you were suing the company for $100 million.
To mislead you, I'm involved in a nine-year-old case that's $100,000, and that's how it was publicized, and that's how it was written up. And I'm suing my former employer for this because the harassment and abuse that
You said that already, but it says on the board you sued your lawyer. Is that true?
No. I didn't sue my lawyer.
Okay. Oh, so the call screener got it wrong. Pardon me.
My case is 9 years old, and he has done absolutely nothing.
All right, so what's the bottom line? What should we take away? Most people are ready to turn the dial and go listen to music now. What do you want to tell the world?
The thing is, I had to take my lawyer after 9 years to the disciplinary committee, and it's a year and a half for the disciplinary.
Now you're saying you are suing your lawyer. All right, Susan, thanks for the call. You know, Creedmoor is closed a long time out on Long Island. The boards are in the windows. There's a very good argument to be made to reopen the mental hospitals. We could clear off the court dockets. First start with the judges. If you randomly took 50% of those in black robes and put them in mental hospitals, that would clear up the dockets pretty quick. Then you have a lot of space left in the mental hospitals that reopen. Randomly pick 50% of the tort lawyers in America and lock them up. Fill the mental hospitals, put them where they belong, let them argue with each other, and then clear up the courtrooms. Get to the part where it's staying a lot, something hot. All right, whatever. I'm not a disco player. Let's have some disco music that actually sounds like dance music on the Savage Nation during the next break. But I want to give everyone listening to the show some legal advice. After many a year, after many a summer, Dies the Swan was written a long time ago by Aldous Huxley. Great, great short story or novel. I remember reading as a kid along the line of reading Chrome Yellow. I read everything Huxley wrote, but I didn't learn very much. Here's the problem with intellectuals. They're wonderful to read. They're wonderful to watch on the screen, but they don't know much about life. Very little is known. They can't teach you anything. I learned more from a plumber than I did from Aldous Huxley. I'll be honest with you. I learned more from a welder than I did from Bertrand Russell. I learned more from a carpenter that I knew than I did from certainly Jack Kerouac, who I learned nothing from. I enjoyed reading him. I mean, I'd read these books, and I think I was gleaning some magical, you know, knowledge about the universe and how to lead my life. No, they didn't know very much. I read everything Hemingway wrote. The poor guy shot his brains out with a shotgun. I didn't, thank God, take too much of his advice to heart. I mean, he had deep emotional problems, and of course there was a genetic tendency towards depression and suicide, which is no laughing matter. That's a really tough one to overcome. And then the final straw was when Hemingway went to the Mayo Clinic and they gave him shock therapy, and he came out of there and tried to walk into a propeller of a waiting plane because he couldn't think anymore and therefore he didn't want to live anymore. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that he put the shotgun to his mouth, but I didn't learn anything from Hemingway that I really took forward with me in life. Everything I have learned in my life, I learned from the School of Hard Knocks. Because I'm a dreamer. I'm an idealist. My head's in the clouds. And let me tell you something. If you walk around with your head in the clouds, you're going to wind up missing a curb and getting hit by a bus. So at some point, you have to watch out for the buses turning the corner. Unfortunately, in San Francisco, they don't know that. They think that the world revolves around them. You look at the bicyclists. You look at the walkers. You look at the morons who go on the subways with their pants off yesterday like idiots. The world is on fire. Islam is taking over the globe. And these morons are going on subways without pants like it's a joke, like it's all a game. So everything I've learned from pure observation and living. And one of the things I want to tell you is avoid arbitration at all costs. I know you didn't know where I was coming from or where I was going. I'm just telling you, look, I won in the Supreme Court yesterday, and I didn't even take it to the Supreme Court. My antagonist took it to the Supreme Court because he wanted to avoid paying me, in my estimation. So he figured he'd keep appealing and appealing and appealing. Well, eventually an appeal has to come to an end. Now, the trick is now find the money. That's another thing I want to tell you. Don't ever think you're going to win and collect. That's something anyone in business will tell you. There's one thing between winning, and there's another thing in winning and collecting. Two different worlds. And again, the lawyers and judges don't care whether you collect. They care about whether they have a job or not. Moving the interview with Mike Levine up by half an hour, the undercover agent extraordinaire, and he'll be with us at the top of the next hour, because the court's horror stories that I have on the board are so alarming and interesting that I don't care if you're worth $1 billion or you're in a prison, you're going to want to hear them. WFTL, Mark from Fort Lauderdale. Go ahead. What's your story?
Yes, how you doing? My story is my first encounter with the court system, and first of all, I couldn't agree with you more about the way the lawyers throw things out. I was actually a landlord at the time, and I had a tenant who basically wanted to rip me off for rent. And I took him to court, and I went to court, went before the judge. He wasn't really ready, so we had to come back. So I had to take another day off of work. So I did, came back like 2 weeks later. This time, the judge treated me like I was the worst person in the world, but I still won the case and ended up collecting zero from the tenant. So, I mean, even though that I did win, absolutely what you said before, I collected zero.
The tenant owed you back rent, I assume?
Bingo. Right.
All right. So you sued him for the back rent, you won, and then he took a walk and you never found him, right?
It's funny because years later I did see him. And he didn't recognize me, but I recognized him. I actually sat next to him in a dinner. It was interesting. And
what, you gave him some polonium sushi as a gift?
No, actually, believe it or not, I just told him, I said, you know what, I forgive you. And I walked away, and later on he came up to me and said, what are you talking about? And I explained to him.
Well, listen, that's why the movie The Godfather was so big in the 1970s. Because everyone listening to this show wished that they knew a godfather to seek justice, because they know that they can't find justice in the courts. Do you remember the theme of The Godfather about a little undertaker whose daughter had been molested by boys who got her drunk? And on the day of Godfather's daughter's wedding, he has to see people and answer their favors. And the undertaker says to him, these American boys, they got my daughter drunk. They gave her whiskey. They took advantage of her. So the Godfather, played by Brando, says, tell me what you want me to do. And he leans over and whispers in Brando's ear, and Brando goes, no. And then he calls in Fat Clemenza, and he says, here's what I want done. And he wants justice, in other words. He's going to do back to the boys what they did to the daughter. So we all love Brando because he was a judicious gangster, right? Now, how many of you listening to this show, in your heart of hearts, didn't wish at some point in your life for justice that you could not find in the courts? I mean, don't call the show. That's what I'm talking. Am I right or wrong about that?
Absolutely right.
All right, well, that's the problem. I'll give you another example from Life 101. And I'm going to try and do it in a way that offends nobody in my own family. But they don't listen anyway, so what's the difference? I mean, my immediate family, yes. I'm talking about the family I left behind. let's put it to you this way. There was once an individual in the family who ripped my mother off for her life savings. And she had respected and loved this man. She looked up to him. She thought he was so charming. And one day she cried to me that he took all of her money on a fake investment. But he was so charming. He would give her shrimp, stuff like that. He'd pay her back with petty garbage to keep assuaging her. And she came to me and she told me what he had done. And she told me what she wanted to be done. And I said to her, Mom, listen to me. Seek justice from God, not from me. Well, as things turned around, this very individual who hurt her very badly and others in the family wound up in jail for unrelated charges. He died a broken soul, an unknown broken soul. I didn't wish him any harm because I said to myself at the time, this is a case for God, not for me. And I tell you the truth, to a great extent, God sees the truth, and maybe he waits too long in some cases. I have seen God's hand in the case of evil. I have seen it over and over in my life. Don't assume that people who are bad always get away with it. And don't assume that people who are good always get hurt. It's just not the way it is. So in that sense, maybe I'm a little naive. Maybe I myself am still a little naive. And, you know, when you seek immediate justice, that's called vengeance, incidentally. That's what it's called. Immediate justice is called vengeance. Judicious justice is called justice. But that requires prudence. Now, I don't mean to get too preachy, but I know that what I just said is, I think, on a higher level than you might expect from a radio talk show. But we're talking about justice is what we're talking about, because I feel elated by what just happened. I mean, I suspected the Supreme Court would not hear this trivial case. I knew it was being done just to avoid paying me. Now I'm going to have to collect from what? Who am I going to collect from? There's nothing left up there but two Dixie cups and a string. That's all. It's all gone. You know, I'm entitled to all of my archives in the case. All of my radio archives from the year 2000 are in the archives, and I won all of it. That means more to me than anything. Have I seen one of the tapes? No. I want my radio archives. Now, I wouldn't even get that, did I? Did I even get that? Where are they? I think this guy would rather burn them than give them to me. That's the kind of justice there is. So don't tell me that I don't know what justice should be. And don't tell me that I suddenly think it's all wonderful. No, I don't. I'm not a Pollyanna. But nevertheless, we'll see how this goes. Let's hear your cases. That's what I care about. 855-407-282. We just heard a case from the East Coast. I think we should now hear one from the West Coast. KSFO. San Francisco. Steve on KSFO. What's your court case?
My court case actually was with the Department of Corporations in the state of California, and during a phone conversation, they told me, quote, they were investigating my company, and they said, we can't find anything wrong, but we're going to force you to franchise because we don't think it's fair. You're so much less than your competition. This was all spawned by my competitor, who's much, much, much larger than us, filing things that with different states to investigate us because we sold as a business opportunity, they sold as a franchise, and they.
How much did this cost you in the court, Steve?
A little over $50,000.
Did you win in the long run or not?
Thousands to franchise.
I'm saying, but so in other words, the end, you didn't win anything. You lost.
I lost because I chose not to fight. We were already into this thing for so much money that we didn't.
Well, you know, Steve, you know and I know that sometimes you got to know when to hold and you got to know when to fold. That's a part of business. That's a part of daily life. Only an idiot would get into a fight with someone who they know can beat them, you know? I mean, you know, we love to see the character in the movies. He gets pounded and he keeps getting up. And the guy hits him and knocks him down. And the guy refuses to quit and he gets up and he gets his teeth knocked out and his broken nose. But in real life, you don't do that. What you do is you get up and walk away if you're being pummeled.
Absolutely. That's exactly
right. And I'm talking about reality 101. I'm not talking about a movie. Now, there are guys who will fight until they're dead. I know that. We've read about them. We've seen them. But how few and far between they are, we don't know. But the point is that how you want to be in a court of law? No. If you're going to get pummeled, you know, you walk away and that's it and you fold. Unless you have unlimited time and money. And some people do. I don't. WABC, New York City. Mike, what's your court horror story? Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
This story kind of reiterates your point about the liberal court of appeals, but back in 2008, I think it was a small-time loan that I gave this guy. He didn't want to do it, but he kept begging me. I was like, all right. So I think it was an initial amount of $3,000. So I took it to court when he finally didn't pay, which I knew he wouldn't. And I did get the judgment, and then afterwards I turned him over to collector, because as you just said, you know, that's getting the win is only half the battle. And
right.
The collectors did a really great job. But what a lot of people don't realize is that at least in New York, I don't know about the other states, but you have to have a minimum amount of cash in your account before they can levy. So that's another hurdle you got to get over. And I think the number is like, unless you have $1,700, they can't garnish wages or levy the account. So anyway, time goes on. We're slowly tracing more accounts as this guy's running off. But then I get called. I got to go to Afghanistan. So I sort of forgot about it. I get back a year later.
Hold on. You were called up as an active duty soldier?
I'm reservist. I was on active at the time, yeah.
All right, so you're called overseas to serve your country. What happens in your absence?
You go back to the court. And I couldn't be there, and it was unbeknownst to me. I find out from my collector, so I touch base with him when I get back. And I said, hey, you know, what's going on with the the deal we got.
So what, they overturned it while you were away in Afghanistan serving your country?
Overturned, yeah. The exact words said to me by the collector was, New York's gotten even a little bit more liberal since you've been away. He took it to the Court of Appeals, and, this is a pro-tenant, pro-deadbeat.
Mike, you sound like you have a good attitude towards it. You lost a small amount of money. It wasn't small at the time. It seems to me you've overcome it and risen above it. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I actually did end up taking him back to the court, too.
All right. Listen, it's enough. There's a time to fold, too. It's $3,000. You can turn this into a lot. I know people who go on and on with one case for 10 years. A mold in the ceiling. They sue the tenant. They sue the landlord. And then they sue the manufacturer of the board. Then they sue God. Then they sue the water company. They go on for 10 years. They think there's a rainbow with a pot of gold at the end of the lawsuit. There's nothing. You know how much money you could have made if you took your mind and put it on earning money? You could have developed a mop, for God's sake. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COI. I don't know where the hour went. We have a minute left in the hour. I told you there's a secret about radio. When a show is flying along, it means people love it. When you are doing a show where you can't believe you're still in break number two and you think you're going to have a heart attack, it means you're a bore and you should consider another profession. This is one of those great days, and I didn't think it would happen like this because, frankly, we're talking about courts, lawyers, justice, injustice. It's because of something that happened to me today. The Supreme Court ruled in my favor yesterday. And here's the irony of it. I didn't even know about it yesterday. The lawyer forgot to send it to me. I swear to God. I never got it. So 30, 40 minutes before the show, I hear, oh, did you know you won in the Supreme Court yesterday? I said, what? And you didn't send it to me? No. Great, thank you. It's only been over $1 million in 5 years. Why should I hear about that? It's not important to me. Then I see a story, I don't know if it's related, about a guy I knew who was arrested for giving the wife, allegedly, a nice little, I don't know if there's any relationship, but it happened the same day. Who knows if there's a relationship?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage. Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
You think I care about Obama's speech later? Are you kidding me? I'd rather go to a cancer ward than listen to him. The stupid applause. I'm embarrassed to be an American when I watch the State of the Union address. And that goes for both sides. They march, the aisle, the touching, the glad handing. Every minute he utters and I want to say, and 15 minutes, they clap like dunces. In the chair, up in the chair, and down in the chair. What a country. I wish this country would grow up already. We're not living in the 18th century with the State of the Union address. He's got the internet. He's got a radio. He's got a TV outlet. What's with the State of the Union? To the buggy whip. He gave a speech. They ran home to the newspaper. They gave look what the president just said. Here's the State of the Union. Like, we don't know what it is. We don't know what a wreckage there is out there. We don't know what he's done to undermine everything from the military to the Federal Reserve. I got to listen to this double-talking, community organizing, anti-American. No. See, I don't want to get started on that. We're talking instead about injustice, justice, court horror stories. And I will get back to them. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. But I want to go to my good friend, haven't seen him in years, to talk about Well, you'll hear what. Mike Levine, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're on line 10. Michael, how are you? How have you been?
I'm fine, Michael. I'm so happy to hear your voice again. It's been a while.
Can you believe that I'm still alive and kicking?
No, I honestly don't. I'm a trial.
Thanks for the compliment. It was like 20 years ago, Michael, that you came out to California. I can't believe time has gone by. And you're on the stage with me and great people. And we did the Compassionate Conservative event down in the Marin Civic Center. We had dinner down in Sausalito. And you are like my hero to this day. You were undercover. I got to remind people. Tell people the name of the books you've written, Michael. It's important that they know.
Well, Deep Cover, which was a New York Times bestseller, and The Big White Lie. And Deep Cover is now, you know, with this Sean Penn, Furor, and all of that, Deep Cover is now becoming, you know, kind of important again. It's going up on the bestsellers list, if you can believe it. Because it's all about undercover inside the Mexican government and drugs. And
Michael, I want people to learn a little bit about you. You grew up in the Bronx, did you?
I did. I grew up in the South Bronx in a neighborhood that started out as Italian, Jewish, Irish. And by the time I was 13, it was mostly Puerto Rican and black. And I was among the poor Jews, the poor white folks who stayed in the neighborhood, couldn't move. And to me, it was a great benefit. I loved it. I loved going.
But you learned Spanish. And you know some of the dialects which you used as an undercover. If I remember, you did deep undercover in Bolivia and posed as an Italian. Did you pose as an Italian gangster?
Oh, hey, the role that I used in Deep Cover and The Big White Lie was Miguel Luis Garcia, and I passed as a half Sicilian, half Puerto Rican American mafia don. So that explained why I could speak fluent Spanish with a Puerto Rican accent, and I spoke a lot of Italian, enough to get over. I'm not really bilingual with Italian, but for those Italian listeners, me arrangio in Italiano. I speak enough to get over. And so that was actually my pose for many, many, many years, and I worked deep cover cases from Bangkok to Buenos Aires to Bogota. And it was a hell of a life. I was, I'm privileged. I wake up in the morning, I reach over and touch my wife just about every day and realize what a miracle it is. And you too, Michael. It's a miracle that people like you and me just survived this whole thing.
Are you kidding me? I wake up, it's funny you're talking about that, because survival itself is a victory in this day and age, especially in an age of lies and deceit. Just to get up every morning and have two legs and two arms and a brain is a miracle, Michael. But let's move on to the Sean Penn situation. Is the guy crazy or what? Did he do this for 15 minutes of fame? He needed another high. We know that the guy needs a constant high of one kind or another. That's a given. So what, he did this for another high to be relevant without thinking about the consequences?
I don't think he understood. He was listening to lawyers who were telling him, you're legally okay, but they're the ones he's going to hire and pay about $2 or $3 million to defend him when the government comes down on him. But that's neither here nor there. What he does not realize is that he stuck his head into a viper's nest. These are kill crazy people. They were ISIS before ISIS existed. Don't forget, these Mexican cartels were putting severing heads and putting them on top of school posts long before ISIS even existed. So that's the mentality he's dealing with. What he did by aligning himself with Chapo Guzman was dangerous on several fields. Number one, Chapo Guzman has as many enemies as Bin Laden did. And he now is aligned. And the woman, De Castillo, they're both considered targets, even for the hell of it, because the great notoriety that these kill crazy people would get just from killing Sean Penn, especially Kate de Castillo, because she's back and forth in Mexico, they have no idea of the kind of people who would just kill them for the hell of it. They wouldn't even have to get paid.
But Michael, you know these people. You worked, as undercover in the DEA. Let's talk about reality. You're not just a caller to a radio show. You know this. Are you telling me that this movie star is so detached from reality that he actually thinks he's in a movie and he can get away with it because he's Sean Penn?
It's kind of amazing to me. I mean, back in the days when I did this and I lived that role, I look back and I realize I was kind of crazy. I survived it. But what I learned is the lens through which I'm talking about Sean Penn right now. I know these people. I live with them. In Deep Cover, I capture one scene where I'm with two Mexican hitmen in a room in Panama for about 12 hours, waiting to hear basically my fate, whether or not the Mexicans were going to go through with a 15-ton cocaine deal. And at that point, I'm dealing with the Mexican government. Well, one of the hitmen, a guy by the name of Chuy, he had been shot 6 times by the Mexican federales in a shootout, and he's took his shirt off, and there are the holes, 45 caliber holes, all through his back and butt. And what I learned from talking to people, him and people like it, is, look, Mike, if you go swimming with white sharks, what are they going to do? They'll kill you, because that's what they do. Guys like Chuy, that's what they do. They kill you. That's all he does. He doesn't care about anything else. He's given an assignment, and he kills. There's no going back. Once they hone
so
in...
So, Mike, wait. Let's back up a minute. Sean Penn, as we know, is a self-aggrandizing, narcissistic movie star. He goes and does this. He doesn't think this through at all. No one tells him, wait a minute, you're getting yourself into a situation that may wind up harming you or, God forbid, your family. No one told him that?
I don't think so. I think he talked to lawyers. He was more worried about whether or not the government was going to bust him.
All right. Well, can the U.S. government, I know that the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, who's a great crime buster, is looking into charges against him. Are there any valid charges in your estimation against Sean Penn?
There may be. I don't know all the facts. Look, I worked for an attorney, Bob Semmels, in New York. And there was an international drug case, and the next thing I know, Bob Semmels is busted right out from under me. And he's busted for conspiring to kill a witness in Guyana, British Guyana. And first he asked me to come down there with him, but I didn't go. And he, I don't know whether he was actually doing it or not, but what I do know, what I did find out, was that a paid informer got in and talked to him. Now, the paid informer was the main testimony against Bob Semmels. And he was wired. So I don't know who Sean Penn met. He might have met informants. There might have been informants there. They may be taped. They might have taped some of this stuff. So it depends on the details.
Michael, let's say he said that according to what I've read, he covered his tracks so that he couldn't be traced. He didn't intend to lead anyone to El Chapo, Guzman. He had nothing to do with this and that, blah, blah, blah. But it turns out the Mexican government was following him every step of the way. They published pictures of Sean Penn today getting off an airplane in a jungle airstrip. Now, where does that lead us in terms of deciding whether this guy is in danger or not?
Well, he's in danger on many, many levels. I don't know. I have no idea how this can pan out. We know when I'm retained as an expert on informants and undercover tactics in a court, I am given all the documents. I'm given what they call discovery. And then I can tell where the case is going to go. See, with Sean Penn, if they indict him for something, you can bet that there is a line of evidence showing violations of laws in Mexico and U.S. federal law. And I've been with the United States attorneys when they sit down and they go through these monster law books looking for crimes that were committed. And it's astonishing that in these huge law books, Title 18, Title 21, if they want you, they will get you. And that is no BS. And anybody, any cop, any agent who's been in the business knows that I am speaking the truth. So right now, when I wrote Deep Cover, I was going to do the Phil Donahue show. I got a phone call from DEA headquarters. Somehow they knew I was in the green room. And the man on the phone was a high-ranking guy, and he'd heard about my book. It was coming out. They had intelligence. They knew exactly where I was. And this is what he said to me. Right now, while I'm talking to you, Mike, there are 10 lawyers going over your book looking for a place to indict you. And I said, Frank, if you were looking to scare the hell out of me, you succeeded. Totally. I said, there's no going back. I took two oaths. I took an oath to defend the Constitution of the people, and I took an oath to protect secrets. And when one conflicted with the other, I decided to go with the people. Now, I don't know what Sean Penn is going to say when they open the book to him, if they do. I don't know what...
That's the question. With Obama in the White House, you know and I know, no one's throwing the book at a Hollywood movie star known to cavort with criminals. We're speaking with a real hero, in my estimation, Mike Levine, undercover agent for the DEA for so many years. Haven't seen him in a long time. I'll be back in a minute, right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COI. 24 minutes after the hour. We're speaking with Mike Levine, DEA agent extraordinaire. We'll get back to him in a minute because this breaking news story is hilarious and crazy. Headline, two U.S. Navy boats held by Iran but will be returned. So what's the story about? Are you ready for this? Apparently the girls in Obama's Girls Navy, they were training with small boats in the Persian Gulf. You know, the girls who can't drive boats are now the head of the U.S. Navy. Women who can't fly a plane is the head of the Air Force. And one of the boats broke down. One of our naval boats broke down with mechanical trouble. It runs aground. The U.S. troops are picked up by our enemy. Our enemy in Iran. And Secretary of Hate John Kerry makes a call. He calls Foreign Minister Zarif. And Zarif says, don't worry, you'll get the troops back soon. This is the U.S. Navy. The once proud U.S. Navy. Look what it's been reduced to. The motor breaks down, you hear? And our enemy now rescues them, and he's going to return the troops to us. Mike Levine, welcome back to the Savage Nation. What a world we're living in. Is it crazy or what?
It's a crazy world, Mike. You know what I was thinking about? I think your listeners would see this analogy. I want to tell the story of Arnold Schuster. I don't know if you remember that.
Wait a minute. New York, 1950s. What did he do?
1952. He was a 24-year-old salesman who spotted Willie the Actor Sutton. Willie the Actor Sutton was the bank robber who made himself famous when he was asked, why do you rob banks? And he said, that's where the money is.
Right.
Now, Willie the Actor Sutton was spotted by Arnold Schuster, who's just a walking around guy from Brooklyn. And he got all this fame. You know, I'm talking about notoriety for having fingered Willie the Actor Sutton. And a week or so later, Arnold Schuster was gunned down, mob style, found dead. His bloody body in those days, he used to put it right on the front page of the New York Daily News, and there it was.
Oh, yeah, I grew up on that great Victorian journalism. I loved it.
Me too. That was my life as a kid growing up in the Bronx. Well, here's the rest of the story is, Arnold Schuster's murder was a typical mob rub-out. Now, Willie Sutton was a bank robber. He had nothing to do with the mob. Many years later, I think four decades later, when all the mob guys started becoming informants and stool pigeons, what they learned was that a big mob boss, and I just can't remember his name, saw Arnold Schuster in the newspaper and saw that he fingered Willie the Actor Sutton, who he didn't know at all, but it just pissed him off. And this guy happened to have any number of hitmen hanging around. They'll kill anybody. I had an attack dog in the military. I used to point my finger and he would attack. Well, it's the same with these mob guys. They point their finger and they attack. Now, he had Arnold killed.
Wait a minute. Do you have any left over, any extras, one I can borrow?
I can train one for you. So here's the point. What Sean Penn did was he pissed off people who have right now 1,000 times the power of the American mob.
Wow.
And hundreds, every one of them has 1,000 hitmen, not only in Mexico, but on the streets of the city. In the prison.
Why would he? Here's what I'm going to get to with you when we come back, Mike. I could talk to you for another hour, and we're going to be with you another half hour. I think there's more to this story than meets the eye, and I think that Sean Penn has some protexia that we don't know about, and I want to delve into that. Something's wrong with the picture. He may be stupid, but he ain't crazy.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
And the Savage Nation blasting out across America. I challenge anyone listening to talk radio these days to tell me there's been a better show in the last 30 minutes anywhere on the airwaves. There hasn't been. It's impossible. I haven't spoken to DEA agent Mike Levine in years. And here he is, still kicking. Michael, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
I'm happy to be back, Mike. By the way, Mike, I looked up in my records the Arnold Schuster thing because, you know, I'm addicted to homicides. I cleared a lot of them as a DEA agent and how they happen, et cetera, which goes right into Sean Penn. But the how it was learned that Arnold Schuster was killed just because he pissed off a mobster. It was the mobster was Albert Anastasia. And Joe Valachi, who became a government informer, said that Albert Anastasia was watching an interview with a TV interview with Schuster and said, "I hate stool pigeons. Whack that guy."
All right, and so here's the question. Yeah. Will Sean Penn be seen as a stool pigeon? He didn't exactly give up El Chapo's position. He didn't come out and say, here's where he's hiding.
Word is, I hate that guy. Forget what he is. Forget what's missing. The operative word is, there's a million people out there who hate, when I say a million, very bad people, top people. My opinion as to how Chapo managed to stay out and keep staying out is that he has information and hooks in the Mexican government that are powerful and that are afraid of him, too. So you're talking about a hornet's nest of possible people who hate Chapo, fear Chapo, and the automatic absorption of that hate, the inheritor of that hate, in many cases is going to be, in my opinion, because, I'm judging from living with these people, it's going to be Sean Penn.
You mean, so let me, they don't think that, okay, he didn't really mean to expose him, but inadvertently he did. They don't think that way. All they do is connect the dots. Sean Penn, Chapo gets caught, Sean Penn is the finger.
That's right. And you meet a few people like Chewy, the guy in Deep Cover, and you understand that there isn't any great analytical thinking here. It's the same as the same process, and that's why I brought up Valachi killing Arnold Schuster.
Well, so let's go back to Sean Penn and the actress. Why would he do it? Does he not understand the danger he's putting himself in? And I read something yesterday from someone who said he put his whole family in danger.
Well, you know, it may you can't sell any. I pray that nothing happens to the guy and nothing happens to her.
Absolutely. I hate his politics. I think he's a first-class bad guy. But, man, we all hope nothing happens to him or his family. But what was he thinking or was he not thinking?
My opinion is, from knowing a lot of people who are in that business and from understanding how they rely on lawyers first, which is a big, big, big mistake. I was hired by a big pharmaceutical, internet pharmaceutical company down in Florida. I can't tell their name because I signed non-disclosure. Bottom line is they had hired lawyers to oversee their operations. And they brought me down because they were afraid of DEA. So I reviewed their operation, and all their lawyers, their very high-priced lawyers, told them, "You're perfectly legal. You're okay. There's nothing they can do, nothing they can say." I reviewed them and said, "You're going down. They're going to bust you, and I'm going to tell you exactly how. You're vulnerable through your online positions. An informant is going to, you know, penetrate one of your lawyers, one of your doctors. You, being the giganto pharmaceutical company that you are, you're an attractive target. You're media, which is Sean Penn is right now. He's a target. And what happened is, while they're reviewing my report, their biggest competitor goes down gets busted, all the CEO and the whole board of directors, for exactly what I told them is going to happen to them. Well, they shut
down. Mike, look, I have you on the show because you know the inside world of the drug cartels. No one knows it in, that I know of who knows it as well as you. Okay, given that you know that this is liable to happen, surely he must have considered the possibility, didn't he?
I don't know who he talked to. I have no idea.
No. I'm talking common sense. Wouldn't common sense have dictated inside Sean Penn's addled brain, hey, if I do this, I'm putting myself and my family in danger? Wouldn't he have thought that?
Maybe he didn't. Again, you're talking about people. He was probably more frightened of lawyers and indictments and government coming after him than anything else. And, you know, when you start watching the left hand, you get hit by the right hand. And that's the way life
is. So, okay, so his defense is already saying, all the liberal lawyers from NYU were saying, oh, he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't finger him because he wasn't, you know, then they say he's a journalist. He's not a journalist. He's an actor. We know that. Anyone who writes for the San Francisco Chronicle or Rolling Stone is not a journalist. We know what they are. But nevertheless, he can't hide behind being a journalist. Did he have an obligation to give up the guy's position? Yes or no?
A legal obligation, yeah. But if you hide behind the status of journalism, well, then you get a courtroom debate. You may get indicted. So when these lawyers came up with this definitive, you're a journalist, you can hide behind the journalistic, I forget what which amendment to the
Constitution. First Amendment, basically. He's hiding behind the First Amendment.
Sean, you're
right, so,
the First Amendment.
Michael, look, the first thought is, I think oddly. I don't think the same way other people think. Maybe it's a product of my upbringing or my way of looking at life. I think there's something more to this story. And I think that this guy is as crazy as a fox. He needed more fame. He's a fame junkie. And I think he knew the danger he would go into. So he has some kind of protection somewhere. And I don't know what that might be. I don't know which side of the law he has the protection on. My guess, he has more risk from the dark side of the law than the light side of the law, to put it that way. And I think that maybe he worked a deal out in advance to not be harmed if he did that. I don't know, but something's wrong with the picture.
It is absolutely, we don't know everything, because if I knew more about what happened, what was said, who was at the meetings, I might tell him, you know, right now, head to a country where there's no extradition. I might. I don't know what happened. I don't know the logic. I know that the lawyers, with the words that the lawyers are using, are defense attorneys' words. They'll be in line with their hands out if and when Sean is busted for their million-dollar retainer fees.
Well, here's something interesting that someone brought up. Here's something that someone brought up to me 2 days ago when the story broke about the Rolling Stone article. He was dating a very big movie star. Was it Charlize Theron? Was that who he was dating, I think? And she dumped him not too long ago, just before this interview. They were seen in this picture and that picture, kissing and hugging, they're in love, you know, the standard New York Post stuff, you know, with Bahamas and Miami in the water, couldn't keep their hands off each other. Then all of a sudden we hear she dumps him. Someone says to me that's because she knew he was crazy. She knew he was putting himself in danger. She wanted no association with him for fear that she'd be harmed. That's what this woman said to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's conjecture. The thing is with me, Michael, I'm a court-qualified expert, so I can't ever make an opinion on conjecture. I can say, well, you know, it could be, because that would kill my career. I don't do that. I talk about evidence, and I talk about...
Well, the evidence indicates that something's wrong with the picture. Nobody goes into a hornet's nest like this without wearing webbing. Where's his webbing?
Well, I'm agreeing with you in the sense that there is a huge, dark downside to this. Now, from that point on, what's missing, and I'm also very aware that there will be a tremendous drive to indict him.
And to indict Sean Penn?
That's correct. And the woman. That drive may come from Mexico. They may be indicted in Mexico.
Mm.
Now, I don't know Mexican law. I don't know Mexican law well enough to know, but I do know that there is a strong possibility. I've heard legal people saying there's a strong possibility Mexico will indict him. And if they do, they're going to ask for an extradition from the United States for violation of Mexican drug laws.
It's a different set of laws there than here. Okay.
I have, I don't know that you have a First Amendment in Mexico or the equivalent. They may, but you're not talking about a country that pays much attention to the very niceties of law. Now, what happens is immediately start adding up those zeros for his defense. I mean, just start adding them up. And it's, to me, the risk was there, huge risk. If he had talked to me first, I would have strongly advised him, don't do it. Do not do it. Particularly, do not go down there the way this attorney, Bob Semmels, who I worked with, who is now doing 10 years in prison, don't go there. Because if you go there outside the country, you now are vulnerable to paid informants who'll be there recording you, maybe not recording something.
In other words, okay, so but he didn't know that they'd be following him? They got pictures of him at the Jungle Airstrip with the Mexican actress before they met El Chapo.
Well, then they may have the rooms where they met or the place where the conversations went completely wired.
In that regard, then they call, even at the Golden Globes the other night, that guy Ricky Gervais called him a snitch in a bad joke. I don't know if you saw that. They basically, even in Hollywood, as a joke, they're calling Sean Penn snitch. Do you know that?
Yeah, well, I have no idea about that. I don't read those. Michael, you're gonna think I'm boring, but I don't read the entertainment magazines or any of this. I'm addicted to homicides, murders, 48 hours, forensic files.
Oh, very funny. Very funny. So you like to read, did you ever go on blogs from the old days of crime scene photos? Remember the old pictures that were taken in the 40s and 50s that you could find online? You ever looked at those?
Yeah, the photographer, he was wonderful. Willie something.
Who was?
Are you talking to me, who? Michael?
Yeah, I remember there was a guy, Ouija, who went to every crime scene in New York City with a camera that shot in black and white. His pictures are still the best ever taken. Brains on the floor, blood, the guy over the table. You can still find them online. Remember Ouija? He had a police scanner. He got there before anyone else did. And he took the crime scene photo before they threw the tablecloth over the guy's head.
Yeah, Ouija, I think, was the one who got Arnold Schuster laying there,
Oh, my God.
Nothing covering him. Amazing photos. Terrible.
Yeah.
But amazing.
You as a DE agent, I'm sure you didn't need a camera to see what we're talking about, the horror of what happens to people in the world of crime. Well, God forbid what ISIS is doing today. A headline just came out a minute ago, Mike. ISIS recruitment exploding. Lawmakers are warning that the terror group is gaining affiliates faster than Al-Qaeda. Michael, let's switch it to the bigger picture. If you were in charge of the war of terror, what would you do to stop this?
Well, I lived, and this is a terrible thing to say. You just have to look at what actually worked. And I don't even know if it would work. But when I was stationed in Argentina between 1978 and 82, those were the years of the dirty wars. They call it the dirty wars because they had what they perceived as a terror problem. People were kidnapped, people were killed, bombs went off. So what the Argentines did, now famous as the Dirty Wars, is they would bust people, torture them, get the information as to who these people thought were terrorists, and whole families would disappear. Until Argentina became an incredibly dangerous place to live from the police. I am not saying that America should do this. It was horrible. I mean, it was the safest streets in the world because that was the policy. You didn't commit crimes. And the police were basically serial.
But the terror was being conducted by the left wing, wasn't it?
No, they were against the left wing, Mike. They were very right wing, in fact.
No. I mean, let's clarify what we're talking about. Until the right wing cracked down on the left wing with more terror, and eliminated crime in the streets. It was the left wing that was making the bombs go off and kidnapping, right?
They were leftists, and then consequently what happened is...
Right, and then the right wing, the generals, stood up and said, that's it, and they became even more terroristic, and that ended the terror of the left.
But yes,
that's a horrible story to tell. It's exactly what happened in Argentina. It's, by the way, what happened in Germany under Hitler. I'll be back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COI. Well, 2 hours have just flown by. I've never seen anything like this. This is like the early days of radio when I get people on and we have such rapport. Michael Levine, are you still there, Mike? Welcome back to the show.
Mike, let me clear up something, because your listeners are going to come away saying that I am suggesting that U.S. do something like Argentina. And all I can say is I was horrified. When I was in Argentina, and a lot of this, what happened with me and these death squads is in the books, particularly The Big White Lie. And if you read it, you'll see that a big joke for the Argentine death squads and cops was to invite me to see the homes of escaped Nazi war criminals. Hey, Levine, come with us. You want to see Mengele's house? I mean, that's the atmosphere that I was living in there.
I never took it. I didn't take it the wrong way, Michael. You're on the right side of things. Believe me, I get it. Look at this story, Michael. ISIS burns fighters alive for letting Ramadi fall. As their fellow soldiers, so-called, the vermin of the earth, fled out of Ramadi and fell back to Mosul, they were rounded up in a town square and set on fire by their fellows in ISIS. Can you believe this, Michael? What kind of individuals were fighting here?
Oh, yeah. And so how do you defend against that? Well, in the United States, what one of my suggestions is, because it's an almost impossible, you know, we're a free, democratic, liberal society. That's what we are. We believe in our freedoms, and I do too. I believe very much. Argentina was the safest streets in the world, but man, you didn't. It's the only place I've ever seen where cops walked at you with their gun pointed at you for crossing a traffic line. And yeah.
Right, Michael, stay on the line because I think that we need one more segment with you. You got a little bit at the top of the hour. I'd like you to come back on the Savage Nation, and then we're going to go to my lawyer Dan Horowitz to talk about related issues with regard to my Supreme Court victory, which just came out yesterday in the radio industry. We are speaking with Michael Levine, DEA agent, author of The Big White Lie, been there and done that, about the Sean Penn story. Is he crazy or is he stupid? I don't mean Michael, I mean Sean.
The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
If you just joined the show, in hour one, I talked about, I guess it's my victory in the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday. I didn't take the case there, but let us say an antagonist of mine, who accounted for 5 years of my life, took it to the Supreme Court after many losses, and he lost. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have my attorney, Daniel Horowitz, to discuss the meaning of that. And we talked then about court horror stories. I broadened it, you know, beyond myself to you. Many of you have been inside the legal system. You've won and you lost anyway, because it's a very difficult system in which to prevail. Even when you win, you lose in terms of the money and the time. And that's why the best advice anyone could give you is avoid court at all costs. And people with money know that, and they bury you with threats. Evil people in business threaten others in order to intimidate them to not fighting back, you see. And now we had on an hour two. And joining us again is DEA agent extraordinaire Michael Levine, author of The Big White Lie. Michael, welcome back to the show. We were talking about the crazy Sean Penn situation. Then we went into a bigger story, Michael. I have callers who want to ask you questions about the war on drugs. You were in the DEA when it was really fighting a war on drugs. Is the DEA still fighting a war on drugs?
Michael, you know, it depends on your point of view. What happened to me after the biggest cases in history, really, and that's deep cover, 15 tons with the Mexican government, with Manuel Noriega's money launderer, the Bolivian cartel, destroyed by our own government. I had a few of those, beginning in Bangkok, Thailand, to Buenos Aires, to Operation Trifecta, which is deep cover. What my career became was, when the one to two chances I had in my life to make cases that really would have made a big difference. I was dying to make cases that would make a difference, and they were stopped by our own government. And so
You mean drug cases were stopped by our own government along the lines of the old Steven Seagal movies kind of thing?
Nothing. This is real. You know, for instance, in Deep Cover, we sent a video to Edwin Meese, the Attorney General, of me making a drug deal with the Mexican government, bodyguard of the incoming president, the grandson of another Mexican president in his Mexican colonel uniform, and I'm promised on camera a wide open Mexico for my mafia. If this deal goes through, that goes to Attorney General Edwin Meese. Edwin Meese calls the Attorney General of Mexico and warns him about us. My undercover team. Now,
Edwin Meese blew the cover on you?
Yes, and it's in a New York Times bestseller. And if I was, you know,
now Edwin Meese was Ronald Reagan's attorney general, wasn't he?
Correct. That's correct. At the time, what was more important was getting NAFTA, North American Free Trade Agreement, passed. So if you have an American team of undercover, not just me, we had a whole team playing pretending to be mafia. If you have a whole team of Americans being promised a wide open Mexico for drug trafficking by the government itself, and NAFTA was on the drawing boards, there was a great deal of sentiment against NAFTA. It never would have passed. So that was one of the reasons.
Wow.
To be killed.
That's one of the reasons I don't glorify Ronald Reagan on my show. Believe me, you know, people turn him into a god. None of the presidents have ever been god. They're only men. But you know, Michael, let's make this more interesting for me and everyone else. Here you are, Jewish kid grows up in the Bronx, and the neighborhood becomes black, Puerto Rican, etc., and you learn to speak Spanish. You learn Italian from your Italian friends. You pose as a mixed-blood Italian-Puerto Rican drug cartel, an American drug leader, a gangster?
A mafia don.
So when you go undercover in those days, every breath is potentially your last, correct?
I was a little bit crazy as I looked.
No, I'm saying you're sitting in a meeting and they don't know who you are and they want to feel you out. And each breath they're looking at you, they're smelling you, right? And each heartbeat, you're a heartbeat away from having your brains blown out. So I want to ask a question about it. You live the existential life that people write about, read about. You walk the tightrope. What was that about? You were just, what, tempting fate or what?
You know, I wake up now. You met my wife, Laura, and I realize in the middle of the night, often, what a miracle it is that I came out of this. And, you know, you look, why did I do it? At the beginning, I had my baby brother was a heroin addict. And I believed all the rhetoric. You know, let's go get those people making drugs overseas. They're the enemy. My baby brother eventually committed suicide.
Right, I remember that. Now, wasn't he a cop?
My brother wasn't. My son was a New York City cop who was killed by a drug addict.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I didn't want to bring it up. I remember that tragic, horrible story. Right. My God, my leg just went weak. I mean, my right leg just got weak. What you've been through. So, Michael, you look back and you think, what? What did I do it for?
I know what I ended up doing it for. At first, I was like any soldier. I came out of the military. I was a good GI. I believed in the chain of command. I followed orders. I believed in the righteousness of the war on drugs, that it was real. And then learned that it wasn't real. It took years to learn that. And when I did, all I could do to salvage my brain, my emotions, my heart, my soul, was to use the drug war to target killers, to target people who were murderers. They were bad. And I got them for drugs, but they were just, I felt like every time I put these, Pablo Mejia, the big white lie, he was one of the most prolific murderers in South America. I put him away for 30 years. And I felt like I did God's work. I didn't win the drug war, but I certainly felt like I saved a whole bunch of lives who would never know it.
Now, let me ask you something fun for the Savage Nation. This is scary stuff for most listeners. They're not believing it's real because they live in a fantasy world. Michael, most listeners to radio live in a digital world, an audio digital world, where they're online, and they don't understand what you're saying in some way. They think it's a movie. So let's say you're in Bolivia or wherever they sent you, and you're posing as this gangster. What dialect Spanish would you speak, and how many different dialects did you know well enough to speak them?
I spoke Puerto Rican. Then when I was Puerto Rican, what they call tonito puertorriqueño, tonito boricua, I spoke with a Puerto Rican accent because I grew up with all Puerto Ricans. My first girlfriend was Puerto Rican, Lydia Diaz. I just about lived with her, and I just grew up. And I love that accent. I actually love the Puerto Rican culture. I still dance salsa with my wife, Laura.
Interesting.
And
Wait. Now, I want to talk about movies. Remember the Al Pacino movie where he plays the guy who's just out of jail and he comes back and he wants to stay out? I forget the name of that movie. And he goes back to the mean streets of the Bronx. Carlito's Way. Thanks, Jim. Do you remember that movie at all, Michael?
Excellent movie, yeah.
What was that based on any real people, in your estimation?
You know, he's such a great actor that, you know, you look at him and you say he must have known all of these people that he plays, because he channels people. And I think the really great actors really experience the people they're portraying. They really.
All right, so now that brings us back to Sean Penn. I despise his politics, but I think he's a fabulous actor. He wants to play El Chapo, doesn't he?
I don't know, but I'll tell you what. I can understand him getting so into it that he wanted to get next to, you know, Robert De Niro, for example, optioned The Big White Lie for a while. He never made it, but we went up to his office, and Laura and I, we were talking to him. We spent about 2 hours there. His people were tapping their watches, and he was just studying me. I felt like I was being taken apart with, De Niro just studying me from head to
foot. So he was studying you the way the drug cartels would study you when you were undercover, right?
Yeah, the difference was the drug dealers, they were looking for any sign that I was the one thing they were afraid of, an undercover or an informant, any sign. And that's what I call acting with your audience inches from your face. And you don't get applause. Developed the ability, or had it, was inborn, where I didn't show fear.
Yeah, no, I know it very well. I think I learned it in the same streets as you did.
You don't show fear, because you understand if you grow up in the...
Well, animals can smell fear, too, and that's a tough one to hide, by the way.
Exactly right. And you can't hide it. You could smell it, and I could see it.
I can smell it on lawyers. I once walked into an arbitration hearing, and I won't say when, and I swear to God, the lawyers for the opposition, their suits stank. And I hated them for what they were trying to crucify me. I hated these lawyers after a while for the lies they were telling about me. My lawyer warned me. He said, remember, they're going to try to unnerve you with the questions. You've got to maintain your cool. I said, okay, I will. I come in, they ask me one question. I turned to the lawyers in front of the arbitrators, and I said to them, you know what? I detest men like you. Your suits stink so badly that I think that you're going to give people cancer just being in it. I went on and on. So my lawyer ushered me out of the room, and he said, I told you not to do that, Michael. You got to control your emotions. I said, okay, I'm sorry. I'll go back. He said, please go back and apologize to the arbitrators that you didn't mean to attack the opposition's lawyers. I said, okay. I go, and I did the same thing again. So you could see, you know, sometimes it's very hard to control your emotions, Michael, when you see such people that are such detestable human beings.
You are a high-wire, high-tension guy. I do your show. I've done a lot of shows. When I do your show, I come away at the end feeling like I had a 10-round fight.
People ask how I'm still living and why I'm not fat. The answer is stress works for me.
I mean, it does. You know, I actually know you a lot of years, and I can remember almost by the minute the first time I walked into your studio in San Francisco, and you were moving and what? You're an amazing guy. There's only one Mike Savage. That's the only thing I could tell you, audience. There are no others.
That's a compliment coming from my hero. That's all I can say. I wish I knew you when I was a kid. Boy, would I have gotten even with people I didn't like. So, Michael, what's going to happen with Sean Penn? That's what I want to know. We don't know, right?
It's impossible to tell. I mean, but what you just said is the best advice is avoid lawyers at all costs. He took a giant step into the land of lawyers. So
let's take a call quickly. Santos has been holding on KSFO. Santos, please make your point. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. My point is this. There are historical precedents where we do leverage Hollywood and the entertainment industry to facilitate operations. I think there's an alleged historical precedent where Elvis was honored at the White House by Nixon for facilitating the DEA at the time. I don't know,
Mike. What do you think of that? Elvis was working for Nixon. Is this the same situation, Mike?
Funny about that was I was a DEA agent when that came, and President Nixon gave him a DEA badge. DEA had just been created, and Elvis immediately went out and arrested somebody.
Maybe Sean Penn will get a DEA badge for this act?
Well, he went out and used his badge. He thought it's real, that he could go out and enforce the law.
Santos, what you're saying is a little different, right? You're saying the government has used people in Hollywood before, right?
Well, most recently, during the war, and I'm a wounded combat vet receiving my care here, during the war, the special ops community with the psychological operations guys embedded guys with Fox News to learn how radio and television broadcast worked. And they were spanked, and I think it was the ACLU used the Munt Act to stymie that.
Well, let me send you a gift from the Savage Nation, Santos, a copy of Government Zero for your service to this country. Michael, are we winning the war on drugs, or is it over?
Oh, Mike, this is not a war that anybody fought. I was hired. I wrote a book, Fight Back, How to Win the Drug War in Your Own Neighborhood. And it was called by the Swedish Carnegie Institute, the only book that ever made sense to come out of the U.S. on the drug war. And I was hired as the drug czar of Barnstable County, Massachusetts, to bring that book into life, to make it real.
Michael, I don't mean to cut you off. You know that every word that you utter is important to me, but you know the exigencies of the radio world. We're going to come back. We're going to take one last call about Hillary Clinton and what you think of the case against her on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or Swiss America. I'm going to finish up with the great friend of mine, Michael Levine. Michael, welcome back to the program. People want to know your opinion of this. Hillary Clinton, can they indict her based on these tapes?
Here's the thing. I testify in court all the time. I'm going to use a word, elements of probable cause. That means reason to believe that a crime was committed. Now, if you're a normal walking around person and you acquire the elements of probable cause for the crimes that the newspapers say that Hillary is committing, because, again, I have to guard my reputation, the big question is, why hasn't it been put before a grand jury of American citizens? I don't understand that. And that's what...
Now, we're talking about her emails, whether they were classified or not, right? That's what we're talking about? She says she didn't knowingly transmit any classified information. And yet there's evidence she told underlings to cover it up. Your statement is, why hasn't it been brought to a grand jury? The answer is because Obama is president.
Again, they hope, you know, one day if we're going to have a government that's really for the people, by the people, Congress, if it ever decides to develop cojones and do what Congress is supposed to be doing, Congress will hold hearings to try and determine where the buck stopped. How come you have these allegations and the American people, you know, a good portion of the population is concerned. I put people in jail throughout my career for making false statements, false official statements. I've locked in federal aid.
For less than what Hillary did. I get it. I know how far you can go. You're not a talk show host. I am. Michael Levine, The Big White Lie. Which one of your books is moving up the list now? Which one?
Deep Cover.
Deep Cover. Well, let me know the next time you're on the West Coast, and we'll uncover some good food in North Beach. It won't be Puerto Rican, but it'll be Sicilian. And you could talk to my friend Giovanni in Pinocchio. Suddenly it's 1981 on the Savage Nation. Yeah, well, it's not 1981 anymore. We're moving on in the Savage Nation. Now it gets worse with Sean Penn. Rolling Stones rock star Sean Penn blames America, not El Chapo, for the drug violence. As you'd expect from a Hollywood idiot, wouldn't you? Everything is backwards. Everything is backwards. Dan Horowitz is the only lawyer I trust in America, because he's my lawyer. He's the only good one in the country. Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Dan. Can't hear him, guys. Make a little effort to connect him, because Horowitz back to life. It seems that he died in the ethers of the airwaves. You are here.
Good.
You are here. All right, you're here. So, Dan, why are you here? Why is Dan Horowitz on my show right now? I don't know. You're fading. Something's wrong with the connection. All right, let's disconnect and start again. Rolling Stones rock star Sean Penn blames America, not El Chapo, for drug violence. An interesting article. And there it is again. Not one newspaper in this country projected any kind of disdain towards Sean Penn for that article. Not one of them. And not only that, but the world's most notorious fugitive, El Chapo, was given veto power over the article written by the great journalist Sean Penn. I suppose he'll be given a position in the society of professional journalists. There's ethics questions, there are legal questions, but there's a more striking question, which is, why would you glorify a drug dealer? That's the question that you have to ask. But when you look at the founder of Rolling Stone, Jan Wenner, the question is answered for you. Because these people, in my opinion, answer the question just by being. They have no morality to begin with, in my estimation. They have no ethics, in my estimation, to begin with. Nor does Sean Penn, in my opinion. And now we'll go back to the guest again on the Savage Nation. We'll try for a second shot. Dan Horowitz, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I've got you. I'm here.
Okay, so why are you on the show? Why did I invite you on? What's the topic?
Well, you got a great victory. People should know that the only reason they're hearing you is that 5 years ago, you got fed up with Talk Radio Network and sued them to get out of your contract because they were mismanaging the radio show. And you got out of it years later, signed with Cumulus, with tremendous ratings, tremendous distribution. But it took until yesterday for the victory to finally be upheld by the Supreme Court, which refused to hear their appeal. And you now finally, by the way, 90 days from today, I forgot to tell you when I talked to you earlier, 90 days from today, you can finally go to TRN and get your archives, take them out of TRN's greedy hands, and maybe make them available to your listeners.
Yeah, well, right. I've been wanting my radio tapes going back to the year 2000 since this started. What if they're not there? What if they're gone? Where would they, Dan, what do we do then if they just disappeared my archives?
In other words, if they took something that's so valuable that they held on to it all these years and tried to steal from you, I'll say that outright, if they destroy them, it's priceless. I mean, we listened. I have videotapes of the Johnny Carson shows that I watched when I was young, and it'll be lost to everybody. So they better not have destroyed them. And I'll tell you something. Anybody who worked for TRN or who's there right now, preserve them. preserve them, make a copy of them, get them to us, and we will compensate you. How's that? Do you agree?
I noticed that something else happened that evening after the Supreme Court case, Stan, and I don't know if it's related to it. You want to tell the audience about that interesting news article?
Yeah, how about the news article? I've got the press release from the Oregon State Police because I didn't want to go on air just on a news article. It appears that just hours after Mark Masters lost in the Supreme Court of the United States, there was a silent alarm and a 911 hang-up from his residence. The police responded, determined it was a domestic disturbance, and Mark Masters was taken away, charged with assault, menacing, and harassment.
But who did he do this to, allegedly?
Well, looks like, from what I can see here, his wife.
Oh, my, my. That's awful. That's terrible
stuff. The victim is Patricia Masters.
It was done in front of the children, allegedly?
Doesn't say in the press release.
Oh. Because that was the original news story, so that must be mistaken.
He's right up there. He's in news radio up there, so he knows.
Yeah. Well, Dan, this is an amazing day for us. It doesn't really change anything, does it? I mean, we knew the Supreme Court rarely hears such small cases as this. Isn't that correct?
Well, they rarely hear a case that has no basis. I mean, you had your arbitration decision upheld on the facts by an Obama-appointed liberal San Francisco judge who had no reservation saying that you deserve to win. So,
yeah, well, he knew that, obviously, and then he took it to the Ninth Circuit and the liberal court of the Ninth Circuit. As liberal as it gets, they upheld it, right?
Upheld it strongly. Everybody was strongly in your favor. What bothers me is that, and this is what you brought up earlier, this was a five-year process, and you didn't even go into the full gory details of what they put you through in order to win. 99 out of 100 people taking on a big, evil corporation like TRN would collapse financially. They couldn't do it. And emotionally. You held up, but, I mean, it wasn't easy, Michael.
Well, I don't want to say you were there for me, but you were. And, you're a lawyer, but you're also my friend. I also have a very strong family. And those bad nights that I woke up, how many people can say they called their lawyer at 3 in the morning and we had a conversation? I did.
Look, here's the thing. You talked about the explosion when the other attorney had the case and they had some hearings. And you just had to vent on these people because the process was so unfair. Let me just tell you, listeners, what you went through. Just to get into a room with these arbitrators, you had to spend more money than it would cost to buy a house in some neighborhoods. And then when the other side didn't pay their side of the money, the arbitrator said, well, then everything gets thrown out and you have no remedy. You'll have to pay the other side's money also. I mean, that's the kind of crazy process that's involved here. So nobody
don't understand.
Do it.
No, nobody. These are, and I, Dan, you're an attorney. From the bottom of my heart, I would never ever recommend arbitration again. Would you agree with that or not?
I agree with it, and your listeners need to be warned because when you sign a contract for your cell phone or when you get internet service, half the time there's a provision that says you have to arbitrate everything. If you're a Kaiser member here in California, you have to arbitrate, which basically means you have to basically say, do whatever you want to do to me, I'm out of luck. It's not just the money.
Isn't it interesting? Here you are, you're a top criminal defense attorney, and you're arguing that the courts give a person a better shot at justice than arbitration. Isn't that what you're saying?
Ever in letting judges or arbitrators decide things. I like jurors. What is a juror? A juror is, if I took 12 people who listen to the Savage Nation, I would put them on any case. I don't care if it's a liberal case, a conservative case. People are fundamentally fair. When you put one or two or three people who are professionals in charge, you get all sorts of motives, tilts in their brain thinking, how do you become a lawyer? Why do you become a lawyer? Why don't you make an honest living and work and produce something?
Stop it, Dan.
What?
You don't have to genuflect in front of me just because you're a lawyer. Stop it. I won't permit you to do that. You don't need to do it. You work very hard, and I know the kind of cases that you take on. Did you hear Michael Levine, DEA agent, on my show before?
Yeah, I loved it. I wish you didn't put me on and put him on. He's so good. And I'll tell you something. Sean Penn is in trouble in Mexico. I talked to Marty Garbus, who's our great First Amendment lawyer and my cousin, and he said that Sean Penn has no worries in the U.S., but because he does have all the protections of a real reporter. But he says that in Mexico, you know, all rules are off. They can do anything. So, you know, Levine is totally right on that.
Now, you've represented some pretty tough characters, haven't you, Dan, as a defense attorney?
Roughest characters around, yes.
So, knowing the world that Michael Levine talked about from a different point of view, from the lawyer point of view, because you go in and out of some of the worst prisons in California, isn't that? I mean, that's true, isn't it?
I meet with people who are considered very scary.
Okay. So you know the other side of the coin. Michael is a former DEA agent and an expert witness. You are an attorney who represents criminals. Knowing that world as well as you do, would you say that the actor is in any danger?
I think so. I think that the actress who set up the deal is going to be looked at very carefully to see whether she let somebody else know what's going on. Penn's just a goofy, you know, kind of guy who screwed up and got followed and thought he was so important. They're not going to bother with him, but they're looking carefully at her and who she's connected to in the Mexican police and government and what deal she made. She's at great risk.
You know what I want to do, Dan? People don't get a chance to speak to people of your caliber. I'm going to open the lines up for a quick minute here on the Savage Nation at 855-407-282. We talked about court horror stories a little earlier. We have some amazing callers I've held for 2 hours. And then I'm going to give people an opportunity to call Dan Horowitz on the Savage Nation for a quick in and out. But before we do, I'm not going to go to break. Here's the number, guys, 855-407-282. But Susie on KLIF in Dallas has been holding for 2 hours to tell her story. Susie, fire away quickly. What's your court horror story?
Well, I had kind of a very long ordeal. I know what you've been through. I can feel for you. I was stalked for 5 years and ended in a rape. I ended up getting pregnant that was just bizarre. And then the stalker wasn't done, came back and wanted custody.
Let me see if I can follow it. You were raped by a stalker. You became pregnant, and then the stalker wants custody of the baby?
Well, share custody, because we're going to be tied together forever. That's what he used to leave on my voice message when he was stalking me. You know, I want you to be the... And of the weirdest things, that happened. I mean, how could that happen? And I just didn't...
What does this have to do with the courts, though? The court said he has right to the child?
Absolutely. They don't care how, what, where, when, why. He has paternal rights and has rights to access to the child, and it doesn't matter if the child's going to be used emotionally and against you as, you know, to continue the stalking.
But wait, you're saying that the courts upheld the rapist's right to custody to your child?
Yes. The only stop that is present, but they won't use it, is if it, and the bottom line, it's supposed to be whatever is in the best interest of the child. But
well, I guess it's in the best interest of the child to have a rapist as a father.
The judges, because there's so much battles between mothers and fathers and men's and women's rights, they will not, they don't even care if it's a rapist. You can't find a judge, and you can call any of the major people that, you know, are involved in this.
Holy God. Susie, no wonder you held so long to tell that horrible tale. I hope you got it off your chest. It is now 47 minutes after the hour. The minute I come back, we go to the callers, to the attorney extraordinaire, Dan Horowitz, right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2640.
Our approach would preserve the right of Americans who have insurance to keep their doctor and their plan. It would reduce costs and premiums for millions of families and businesses. Our approach would bring down the deficit by as much as $1 trillion over the next 2 decades. Starting in 2011, we are prepared to freeze government spending for 3 years. Like any cash-strapped family, we will work within a budget to invest in what we need and sacrifice what we don't. And if I have to enforce this discipline by veto.
Well, anyway, again, the sound break is just part of the nature of the business. We have 140 unfulfilled Obama promises from past State of the Union addresses put together by Grabian. They're worth listening to. He was going to cure cancer, freeze government spending, colonize outer space, going line by line through the budget, eliminating needless programs. He was going to convert sunlight into liquid fuel. He was going to close Gitmo. He was going to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Well, you get the list. That was only in 2008. In 2009, the great leader, who some are comparing to Snow White, said that the stimulus bill would create 3.5 million jobs. It didn't. He said a lot of things. But then again, that's why he was elected the second time, because the American electorate is so intelligent. He said it would use stimulus funds to build a high-speed railway in Florida. In fact, they were used to buy beachfront houses in Florida by the grifters who supported him. He would build a new generation of nuclear energy plants. He's not built one. He would pass a climate. You get the picture. He said in 2011 there'll be more nuclear power, more natural gas, and more wind and solar. He said in 2011 he would secure America's borders during the State of the Union address. He said he would enforce existing immigration laws. Well, you get the picture. Do we have any more of the speeches? Because they're wonderful to hear. Maybe we'll play them tomorrow when the tape isn't broken. But then again, if you like Snow White, if you like Superman, if you like Pinocchio, if you like things of that nature, you're going to love the State of the Union address that occurs very shortly. I think the president is getting ready to enter the auditorium. That should take a good 45 minutes to an hour. And I'm not going to watch it. I can guarantee you I'm not going to watch it. I won't even take a nap. I don't want to know anything about what he says because it's all empty promises. All hollow and all shallow. But I want to say this. It's during these State of the Union addresses that I'm ashamed to be an American. I'm ashamed that we are stuck with a political system that is so not only outdated but so corrupt. And there is nothing more corrupt than watching the State of the Union address by any president. To watch these phony statements and to hear the applause. And every minute, another round of applause. And then Nancy Pelosi leaps up, another round of applause. It's embarrassing. It's childish. We're worthy of something far better than what we have, and that's why I'm not going to watch any of it. It's been an amazing day on The Savage Nation, one of my best shows to date, interviewing Michael Levine, former DEA agent. I hope you enjoyed it. God bless America.